change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes and see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podskiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I had this whole introduction set up talking about you and I, how we promised to do a second show when I was in Edmonton with you last week, and then we didn't get to that because we were too busy partying, and I was going to say how we're liars and all that stuff. And then the bombshell on Monday happened, and I figured, you know what? No one gives a crap about your and I personal drama. Let's talk about the big news of the day to start everything off, and that's Orlando Steinhauer is now the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, as announced earlier today on Monday. He replaces June Jones, who stepped aside so Steinhauer could take over, but Jones is staying with the club in the role of associate head coach and offensive coordinator. Mike, last episode you and I did, wasn't this your dream scenario? Wasn't this something you pitched? Like, hey, if Steinhauer can stay as head coach, Jones moves to OC, it's kind of the best of both worlds. I'm not going to say that we have influence in the Ticats organization and that they listen to you, but I mean, the proof's in the pudding, Mike. The proof's in the pudding.
Well, I'm just glad it happened. I mean, this is the perfect scenario. June Jones is a great offensive mind. We all know this. His offense has worked really well in this league. You know, a lot of people said it's too obvious, people figure it out quickly, but that hasn't happened for a year and a half now, a season and a half. This offense has racked up huge numbers, scored touchdowns. So maybe June Jones didn't work out as the head guy, the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Maybe he made some, you know, underwhelming decisions in crunch time with pertaining to the CFL rules. But now that he's stepped aside and he's just specifically running the offense, I see a lot of good things ahead. And just with Orlando, I mean, he's earned this. He's been in the league. He's played in the league for years, coached in the league for years, been in the NCAA as a coach, done well down there. This is his time. And I think that he is the right guy for the position. I mean, he knows the league in and out. He knows all the specific rules. He will be a better decision maker as a head coach. So for this to happen makes me extremely happy.
I still kind of look back and laugh at that, what we heard. I just remember it last offseason. Oh, June Jones, they're going to figure out it's too simplistic, and they racked up points and yards. And sure, they only won 8 of 18 games and all that, but they were an exciting team to watch, and teams did not figure out this offense for the most part. So I think we can put that to bed. Now with him strictly focusing on the offensive side of the game, he doesn't have to worry about all the other head coaching minutiae. I think this offense could be taken to an entirely different, like a higher level than they even were this past season. And this past season, when everyone was healthy, I think you'd be hard pressed to say that there was a better offense in the CFL than the Ticats had, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that in free agency, the offensive players are going to want to come back and play for June Jones. Because from what all I can tell is that the players had a tremendous respect for this guy. They love playing for him as a head coach. So they're going to be jacked up to continue this offense. And I hope that, you know, we get back the big name players like the Bankses and the Saunders and some of the offensive linemen and all that, that want to come back.
So we got to talk about Steinhauer. You touched on it briefly because that's obviously the big news. Steinhauer gets his head coaching opportunity. It happens in Hamilton. He rebuffed overtures from both BC and Toronto because he wanted to stay in Hamilton. I'm of two minds of this, Mike. I'm going to look at it in the positive and go, he's a young up-and-coming head coach. He's been a head coach waiting for a very long time. He's ready for this role. I think he's going to succeed. But there's that little bit of me that goes, man, I remember when people said this about Greg Marshall, who for years toiled as a defensive coordinator and was one of the best in the league. And everyone said, man, when he gets a shot as a head coach, it's going to be a huge success. Lasted less than a half a year as a head coach in the CFL. It's one of those things where I think we see the potential in Steinhauer, and I think everyone sees the potential in Steinhauer. Obviously they do. He wouldn't have been as sought after to be a head man if people didn't see the potential in him. But it is right now just potential, right? It's not we don't know what he'd be like as a head coach. I have all the confidence that he will do a good job, but there's that tiny sliver of me that worries that maybe this is not going to work. You know what I mean? Like, not everyone's cut out to be a head coach. Some guys are meant to just be defensive coordinators or positional coaches or what have you. I don't think that that's the case with Steinhauer, but there's that nagging part of me that just wonders. It's like, will he succeed? I hate saying it because it comes off as negative and me not believing in this, but and that's not the case. There's just something. There's that small little part of me that just goes, wait and see, I guess. Like, we all believe he can do a good job, but we've never seen him in this role before. So now we will, and we're going to find out. I'm more in the side of like where you are, where this is a great move. I am more in that camp, but there's that small part of me that just wonders if maybe he's not cut out for this position, you know?
Yeah. There's always that question mark. I mean, you look at a guy like George Cortez, who was a tremendous offensive coordinator.
Another great example, Mike.
Yeah. For many, many, a lot longer than Steinhauer was. And he just wasn't able to be that promising head coach that we thought he would be. But I don't know. It's just, they had to do this, I think. Jones is getting up there in age. He's not going to be around forever. If they lose Steinhauer to someone else and they succeed, especially if it's Toronto, because we know the history, Steinhauer's played for the Argonauts before. And if he goes down the QEW and, you know, lights it up as a head coach for the Argonauts, the Tiger Cats would be regretting that decision for years. So I'm with you. You never know. You never know with, you know, D coordinators or offensive coordinators if they're going to make a great head coaching, But I think we had to take that risk. And like you, I know that you're leaning on the confidence side. But, you know, I'm going to be more confident than you, just slightly bit more confident, because I just believe that this guy is going to be the next great head coach. And I've been wrong before, but we'll see.
Do you think it's a demeanor thing? Because when you bring up, I brought up Greg Marshall, you brought up George Cortez, they're more the old school kind of disciplinarian coaches. Mm-hmm. Steinhauer seems much more laid back, much more like, because he worked with Ken Austin, right? Ken Austin's obviously very fiery, very passionate, rub people the wrong way. But when he had Steinhauer and Tommy Condell, they were kind of the buffer between the defense, the offense, and the head coach. You know, and so Steinhauer does kind of have that. It's less authoritarian and more collaborative. And he even mentioned that in the press conference today, talking about wanting to bring Jerry Glanville back and how Glanville and Jones don't micromanage. They let their positional coaches do their thing, and they do their thing on game day. Steinhauer believes in that philosophy. Like, maybe that is why this will succeed. And that's maybe even just thinking about it and talking about it with you right now, I'm starting to be more confident that this is going to be, like, you're right, Steinhauer is going to be the next great head coach in this league, because he's more of a newer age coach in that I'm going to delegate responsibilities to my coordinators, who are going to delegate responsibilities to the positional coaches. And he's just kind of overseeing everything. I wonder if maybe that sort of calming demeanor in the head coach, sort of like what June Jones brought to the table, is why I'm more confident in Steinhauer than, say, looking at coaches past, like you said, Cortez and Marshall, who are a little bit more like gruff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but let me ask you this now. You just got me thinking. Do we have too much of that on this team? Is there not that one guy that'll lay down the hammer and be like, hey guys, wake the hell up, you know? Yeah, Jerry does that. I thought he's more of a
Jerry's more of a in your face type of guy. I think that's why him and Jones work so well together.
The yin to the yang. Yeah. The Jones is laid back and Glanville's kind of okay. Yeah. Well, hopefully he'll be that guy. But we looked at it like Ken Austin, that worked for a bit with the hard demeanor, but like you mentioned, they had the buffers. So hopefully the players really enjoy and putting like a tremendous effort forward without the hammer coming down constantly.
Well, and think about when it all started to kind of unravel for Kent here in Hamilton. 2016, the team suffers a little bit. They lost Condell in the offseason that year. He left, I believe it was like April or May, just before the start of training camp. And then in 2017, he had lost Steinhauer. So there's the other sort of buffer. And you've heard some rumblings from players, both anonymously and off the record and stuff, about how, you know, having those guys there kind of kept Austin at a little bit of an arm's reach. They could go to their coordinators and they would go to the coach. When they left, there wasn't that there anymore. I just wonder if maybe that's, if you look at Austin's tenure and how it kind of ended, losing Steinhauer, losing Condell hurt, and now we have Steinhauer back, we have Jones, hopefully we have Glanville. Obviously he only signed a 1-year contract, but through the press conference today, we heard both Steinhauer and Jones say they want Glanville back. Steinhauer was like, no, if Jerry Glanville wants to be here, he's going to be the defense coordinator, he's going to be calling the plays. I want him back. I loved working with him last year. So hopefully Glanville returns, because he can only get better after a season in the CFL. The defense was really good, tapered off near the end of the season. But for a first-year CFL coach, I think Glanville did a hell of a job. I think June Jones, for a guy who had only been, I think he's now been a CFL coach for 30 games, I think he did a pretty darn good job. Jones is the offense coordinator. Glanville as a defense coordinator. Steinhauer as the head coach. I mean, that's a pretty dangerous trio at the top of your coaching food chain there.
I'd have to agree. I like all those guys. I think that Glanville did a tremendous job during the season. Like you said, the defense kind of fell off a bit near the end, and then the game against Ottawa, it completely fell apart, which kind of made me wonder if he'd be back. You know, in the biggest game of the year, they allowed 6 touchdowns. So, Steinhauer wasn't necessarily, this is what I heard, he wasn't necessarily concentrated on the defensive side of the ball last year when he was the assistant head coach. So maybe there'll be a little bit more emphasis on the defensive side of the ball, maybe helping out Glanville a little bit more to, step up his game and make sure that this defense runs strong throughout the whole year and into the playoffs, if we make the playoffs next year.
It's not an if. This team will make the playoffs next year.
Okay.
No doubt,
Josh. We'll see.
But I want to ask you this, because I have an opinion on this, and I want to get yours. Do you think they make this move if Mark Trestman is still the head coach in Toronto?
I think they do. I think they do. I think Jones stepped down, and I think this was already in his mind that maybe he wanted to step down after this season as head coach. And the Ticats knew that Steinhauer was sought after by others. If Mark Creston's still in Toronto, there's still a job up for grabs in BC that he could have taken. So, yeah, I think this still happens if Trestman's still around.
See, I don't. I don't think Steinhauer wanted to leave Southern Ontario. I think the Argos job opening up forced this move. And I'm not saying it's a bad reason. That's not a negative. I just think I'm not sure if Steinhauer goes to BC. I know he's a West Coast guy. I think he was born in Seattle. But most of his coaching and playing life has been in Southern Ontario with the Ticats, the Argos. I believe he spent a year with the Ottawa Rough Riders before he came to Hamilton. I think he came over in the expansion draft, if I'm not mistaken. His coaching career outside of Fresno State, which is a West Coast, obviously, area, it's been with Toronto and it's been with Hamilton. Like, I feel like this is where he wants to be. This is where he wants his family to be. He wants to be in the Southern Ontario market. I feel like if Trestman still coach, this might happen next year. I'm not sure it happens this year.
That's a fair assumption. He
does
have a lot of ties.
We'll
never know. But
no.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something that popped into my head because I don't think when Steinhauer came back last year, there was any – look, the Argos were coming off a Grey Cup victory. Everyone, if you looked at the start of this season, a lot of people had the Argos finishing either first or second in the East. More people had them finishing first. I don't think anyone saw Trestman's firing coming. So I do believe that Steinhauer was brought back and was told, look, you're our head coach in waiting. June Jones has signed a 3-year deal. Maybe we have him as head coach for 2 years. You take over in the third year. Jones then does this, steps down, and becomes the associate head coach and offensive coordinator. I don't necessarily know if it happens right after the first season. It again, this is purely rumor speculation on my part. I'm just freestyling here. But I feel like that no one saw that Trestman firing coming a year ago. No one, if you would have said a year ago, Mark Trestman will not be the head coach of the Toronto Argonauts by the end of 2018, people would have called you crazy, right? They just won a Grey Cup. They had finished first in the East, 9-9, whatever, doesn't matter. They were the Grey Cup champs. There's no way that Trestman's going to get fired. He gets fired, and I think that puts all this into motion. I think that that was the catalyst to, we're going to, there's now two openings. We're probably going to lose him to, because with one job opening, there's so many guys. Just look at the names that we've heard interviewing: Clay Brooks, LaPolice, Tommy Condell, Jamie Elizondo. No, like, there's so many coaches that have been interviewing for both these head coaching jobs. If there's one available, there's a less chance that they're going to lose Steinhauer, especially because it's a team out on the West Coast. I feel like that Argos move kind of threw this into motion, because I think if they don't make this, I think Steinhauer is the head coach in Toronto, because I think he gets an opportunity to coach in Toronto, he's going to Toronto. Again, I'm not necessarily saying that it's a bad thing that they did this. I just think that that's kind of what put this all into motion.
And I also think it had something to do with how Hamilton's season ended as well. Like, Hamilton, you know, makes it to the Grey Cup, maybe wins the Grey Cup, I'm not sure that Jones is stepping down, you know, if he had all that success. But, you know, that's just rumor and innuendo, you know.
But then maybe he does step down because he gets to kind of
he
walk
fulfilled
away the at
the
top
prophecy.
Of the game.
Yeah, true enough. That's an also a possibility.
I think in looking at this and it being positive, because it's the offseason, who's not positive in the offseason? I think this is, out of all the possible scenarios of, okay, the Ticats got to make Steinhauer head coach for whatever reason, anything that could have happened here, I think Jones staying on staff and becoming the offensive coordinator, like, this is the best possible outcome to any sort of coaching of people on this team, no?
I totally agree. I'm through the roof happy that Jones is back as the OC. I love that offense. I think it's an exciting offense to watch. It produces. It gets it done. Like, we had trouble for a while in the red zone this season, but they fixed that, and the red zone offense became really potent again, like it was last year in the second half of the season when Jones was around. So I just love everything about this decision.
Well, the Ticats were what, like the third or fourth highest scoring team in the league? Third. They were the third highest scoring team in the league, the highest scoring team in the East, and were 8 points behind the Stampeders for second most points scored in the CFL this year. And yes, they had a couple defensive touchdowns and a couple special teams touchdowns, but for the most part, that was the offense scoring the points. So now you get June Jones not having to worry about anything else but running the offense. This offense could put up 600 points next year.
Yeah, depending on who we get back in the receivers game, because there's a ton of free agents, obviously, just like every team. But I think if we get back Banks and Saunders, I mean, we'll be laughing.
Well, and I think that I believe you touched on it a few minutes ago. Keeping Jones as the OC will attract those offensive free agents to go, we're not learning a new system. We're coming back to a system that we thrived in, because of all the players that are free agents on the offensive side of the ball, they're guys who have thrived in Jones's system. Brandon Banks, I think, and I think I said this on the last show, this offense was tailor-made for him, and he is tailor-made for this offense. I don't think he wants to go in. Like, I think he knows that he can come back here. If he plays a full season, he's going to put up 1,700 yards. He's going to score 10, 12, 14 touchdowns. Like, he's going to be the monster receiver that he can be in this offense. I don't think he's going to look for greener pastures elsewhere, because I think he thinks the greenest pasture is going to be in Hamilton.
Yeah, and the same goes for Saunders. I mean, this is a guy that got injured halfway through the season and had 700
almost 800 yards.
Yeah, so that's another guy that can put up 1,600, you know, and 10 touchdowns maybe. I mean, he was thriving in this offense. He was as impressive as Banks was at the time when he got injured.
Yeah, and to think about, like, you had him, you had Banks. We haven't even mentioned Luke Tasker, who put up 1,200 yards and 11 touch, like, had one of his best seasons ever.
Mike Jones coming back, possibly. I mean,
Mike Jones,
he
potential
had a tremendous
receiver.
Season.
Like,
yep.
No, with Jones running the show here on offense, like, this could be one of the best offenses we've ever seen in Hamilton.
Yep, I totally agree. And I don't think we're reaching when we say that. I mean, we've seen what it can do. And if all those receivers don't go down, I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, well, man, I'm still pissed off that Chris Williams got hurt, because he was just rounding into form, and what he could have
done. I forgot
done.
About him.
Man, yeah. I kind of hope he's back.
Yeah, so do I.
Just to see what he can do. Him and Brandon Banks? That's scintillating what those two could do together.
He's tailor-made for this offense, too. It's just, it's made for smaller receivers, fast smaller receivers. That's what Jones likes, and he is the prototypical guy for that offense, just like Banks and just like Saunders.
So last week, to kind of put a cap on this whole Steinhauer talk, you put up a poll on our Podsky Twitter page talking about kind of what do fans want. I think this is a great look into the mind of some of our listeners and some of the fans of the Ticats. What did that poll show you when you kind of put the Steinhauer-Jones question to them?
Well, 55% said they want Orlando Steinhauer for the head coach next year. 40% said June Jones, and 4% said other.
What's the who could possibly be an other?
I don't know. I don't see. I have no idea. Maybe Paul Appelese or someone else.
Seriously.
Yeah, but it is kind of true. I thought the numbers would be a little bit more favored in Orlando for Orlando. I mean, 55% to 40, I thought it'd be more like 70% for Orlando and maybe 20, 25, 30 for June Jones. But yeah, the Ticat fans, you know, not by a large margin, but said they wanted Orlando and they got him.
I wonder if you would have put the question of Steinhauer's head coach, Jones's OC, Jones's head coach, Steinhauer gone, or other, how that would have skewed the poll, because I gotta believe that people would have gone more heavily in favor of, oh, Jones is staying and he's going to be running the offense, like the scenario that ended up playing out. I think you would have gotten your 75-80% in favor of that versus just Jones and no Steinhauer.
Yeah, true enough.
All right, so we're going to talk more Ticats in a bit, but I kind of teased at the beginning, you and I were supposed to do a Grey Cup preview show last week, and we were having so much fun going to all the parties and hanging out with CFL fans.
We did a preview show, didn't we?
No, we never ended up doing it. We did.
We did
the early week show, and then we said, we'll be back later in the week to preview the Grey Cup. And we never ended up doing it. So we're dirty, filthy liars. But here's what we're going to do. It's been over a week now since Grey Cup week ended, but we were both there. We had a blast. So I kind of wanted to look back on kind of the week that was in Edmonton for Grey Cup. And the one thing, after, when we did our one show during Grey Cup week, the one thing that I got tweeted at the most was that people were kind of ticked off that you and I didn't tell everyone how our first meeting went. Because as everyone knows, that was the first time that Mike and I had ever been face-to-face before. And people were like, you didn't even talk about it on the show. Like, what? Like, come on, man. Like, you have to talk about what it was like to finally meet each other. And it was regular. Like,
It wasn't. Not
I texted
special.
You that I'm outside. You came outside. We shook hands. We hugged. You led me inside. I punched you in the face to establish my dominance, and it was. We just went from there, right?
that was basically it. I cowered in the corner like a little. I won't say that word, but you know, you showed your dominance right away, and. You locked me in my room and wouldn't let me out for the rest of the week, and that was about it.
Yeah. No, it was about as ho-hum as a first meeting can go. It was about what you expect when two people who have been friends for a while finally
I set up fireworks outside, and it was
at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, no chance.
No chance.
Yeah, it was a very early morning meetup because I had a very early flight. So that was our Tuesday. We basically just hung out. Goofed around, ate some food. You went to work, so I got some quiet time to myself. But Wednesday was kind of the kickoff for us of Grey Cup. We went to a kind of Grey Cup gathering at – what was the name of that bar again?
O2's.
O2's. That's where we got our cards to, which were super cool, and that was a super fun thing all week, handing out packs of cards. The craziest thing to me, Mike, is what one of the things that I enjoyed most about Grey Cup was actually meeting people. And as I've regaled online and as I've regaled probably on this show, I don't like meeting people. I am not a people person. I am not a social person. But everyone I met was so nice. And it started on Wednesday, met a bunch of people. Like, and obviously there was a lot of podcasters there and people that I you're in Edmonton, so you knew some of the Edmonton people before I did. But it's like it's all people that you know, quote unquote, know because you interact with them online. But everyone was so nice. It was so fun. Like, just it was a really good way to kind of kick off Grey Cup week, I think. I ended up staying. You ended up going to the Cardinal concert. You badgered me into trying to go, and I told you no. What was the concert like?
It was good. It's, you know, some of the songs, I forgot that they were Cardinal Official songs. So there were some songs in there that I suddenly remembered, and he put on a pretty good show. It was at the same place where the Atlantic Party was Friday at the Shaw Center. So, yeah, it was a good time. I had a great time at the O2's bar as well, meeting all the podcasters there. It was really cool. Like you said, getting our cards was tremendous. Which I forgot to keep one of, like, I wanted to keep my card, but I gave it out, but that's all right.
What?
Yeah, it's okay. I gave it to one of the fans. I kind of forgot that was my last one, but it's all good. They were happy, so, you know, it was all about giving them out. So I had a great first night on Wednesday night. You don't usually do a lot on Wednesday night, but there was lots to do.
No, and I think that was kind of, it was a good sort of easing into of, okay, what to expect. Thursday for me kicked off. I went to, and I'm not going to talk about this a lot, but I went to the Alberta Legislature, and I'm a politics nerd. I'm a history nerd. One of my goals when I go to a province is to go to the provincial capital and to see the legislatures there. This was the fifth one I've been able to see. I've also been to the House of Commons in Ottawa. So this is one of the things I wanted to do. This was outside of the Grey Cup stuff, but I met a lot of cool people there. I got a personalized tour from an Alberta MLA. We got shouted out during question period. Like it was a really cool experience. But let's talk about the football stuff because you weren't there with me for that. That was a me only thing because I'm the politics guy here. The thing for me, I did two things on Thursday. I went to the Spirit of Edmonton, and that was a bit of a disappointment. So I won't go into that too much. But our boys, Travis and Brazilian Ty, did the Two and Out live show. Man, was that fun. Man, that was the pierogi eating contest that they had with Zach Evans. Just the show itself with Janine and Ryan up there doing their thing made me want to get up on stage and do a live podcast, Mike. So I hate to break it to you, but one of these Grey Cups, I think you and I are going to be doing one of these shows, buddy.
I think you'd be really cool. I might be a little bit nervous being up there in front of people, but I'm sure I could get it done. Yeah, they put on a really good show. It was run really well, really professional. Janine and Ryan had a good back and forth about who might win the Grey Cup, and obviously Ryan was correct, but Janine held herself really well, and the Two and Out guys did a tremendous job running the thing. So, yeah, I think it'd be really cool to have our own type of thing like that someday.
And come on, what other league would you go to a fan live podcast and get to watch a two-time Grey Cup champion get into an eating contest with a fan podcaster? Like, come on, you're not doing that. I'm sorry, you're not doing that. And this is not a slag on the NFL, the NBA, or any other professional sports league. You're not doing that in any other sports league. It's not happening.
No, it's just the athletes aren't down to earth like they are in the CFL. They're not making $10 million a year, and I wish they were. But it's a nice thing about this league that you can mingle with the players, and they're not going to have 10, 15 security guards around them to protect them. They're just normal people like us.
So you and I both went to Spirit of Edmonton. We didn't go together, as fate would have it, but we both ended up there. I didn't care for this. What did you think?
I had a good time. Yeah? I had a good time. It's always the biggest party there. You didn't like how it was run?
No, the lineup, and then you get in, and then you're put into, like, a cattle calling room, and then they're shouting out numbers to get you into the main room. Like, I had a good time when I was there because I basically spent the entire time with Joel Gassen, my Three Down Nation compatriot, and Joe Pritchard, the buddy from Wisconsin who co-hosts the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast, who I'd met previously in Hamilton when he came up for a Ticats Bombers game. Basically, spent my entire evening with talking to them, hanging out with them, and that was cool. It just, I feel like for the host city's main party on the one night where there's nothing else, because that's what I was told. Like, you go to Spirit on Thursday because it's the only thing going on. I didn't feel well run to me. The venue seems small. I don't know. It wasn't bad. It's like, that's what I want. I want to make that, like, nothing I did this week in Edmonton, the week I was there, was bad. This was just maybe not as good as the other stuff I did.
I like the waiting room because at least you weren't outside waiting.
Oh,
And I know you had
that's
to wait
true.
outside
Nope, that's
originally,
cool.
but
No, I get that.
but yeah, to be honest, it was run of the mill, Spirit Edmonton thing. It's pretty much the same every year. But if you're not, drinking 20 beers, it might not be the best of times.
And 20 beers I did not drink. Friday
Yes.
was the Schooners party. That was awesome.
That was
Being
cool. That was
in
cool.
it, I think the venue was great. The
Yep.
tables that they had set up so people could sit down, I thought that
Yeah,
was a good idea.
you couldn't sit down at the Spirit either. That was
No,
one thing.
no.
Yeah, so.
So having tables for like, and like there was music and it was loud, but it wasn't so loud that you couldn't have a conversation with someone. And like the lobster rolls were delicious. And that the fact that we were there to witness history. And I know people, maybe even yourself, will poo-poo it because, again, where's the money for the stadium? But to be in attendance when they officially announce that the Atlantic Schooners will be the Atlantic Schooners, and really, what other name could it have been? I don't know, man. I kind of get goosebumps just thinking about it. Like the hair is standing up in my arms. Like that was a cool moment to be a part of.
Oh, absolutely. I've been waiting for that moment forever. And it was really cool. The crowd went nuts when they, showed the actual name, even though it had been
It
leaked
leaked a
earlier.
little before. Our buddy Trav from the 2-0 podcast kind of leaked it when he walked into the room when it first opened.
Well, it's their fault for having it up there on the big screen.
Indeed.
But it was really cool to be a part of. All the people that, they had the prospective owners up there and the gentleman who has run the Atlantic Schooners party for the last 13 years or so, I believe it is. He was pumped that the name was Schooners, and if this actually goes through, we can, and they build the stadium and they have the team in 2020 or 2021, we can say that we were there for the team name revealing. So that's a pretty cool thing to be at.
Yeah, I ended up spending a lot of time there. My weekend was essentially spent, if it wasn't with you, I was with Joe from the Rouge, White, and Blue show. But I had a really long conversation with the guy that runs the Atlantic Schooners podcast that he started this year. Atlantic Zone Coverage, I believe it's called. Had a great conversation with him. We were just chatting about just football and what it's going to be like to be able to go to Halifax for a game. And it was just really cool to be in that atmosphere where everyone was so positive. Like everyone was just dying in anticipation. And when they announced the name, everyone just exploded with excitement. When they said they had 20 t-shirts they're going to throw out, the people just ran. I think I even saw you run up to the
Well, yeah,
stage in the hopes to get
I wasn't going to. Then my dad was like, push me, essentially. Go, go, grab one. Oh, I don't want to run into this crowd and like all these maniacs. But I didn't get one, unfortunately. But I tried. I tried.
Yeah. No, I think that was one of the highlights for me of the week was that Friday. Saturday for me started off with a breakfast with a bunch of fans. Janice, Saskatchewan Roughriders fan, was kind enough to put together kind of a fan breakfast that for the people who didn't want to spend $7,000 to go to the Spirit of Edmonton breakfast. So we went to a hotel and sat there and ate buffet breakfast food and chatted about football, and that was a fun time. And then that led to going to the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event, which was held at O2's. Is that the name of the bar that we were at on Wednesday? Yes, O2's. Same place there. That was a really fun time, man. Joe Von Johnson showed up. Nick Lewis showed up. Devon Claybrook showed up. We raised like $5,000 for a charity in Edmonton. That was a really, really fun party. That was maybe, of all the things I did that week, the most surprisingly upbeat, fun event because It was just everyone there having a good time. That was probably the most you and I spent together at any of these parties. But we just, you know, sitting there, we're watching the Vanier, we're talking football, we were talking to people we'd met throughout the week. Play like Jovan Johnson showed up, won the 50-50, and bought everyone, like, he bought us drinks. Like, we did a shot that Jovan Johnson paid for. I say it again, like I said about the 2-0 show. What other league would you have this happen where a future Hall of Fame player, a former defensive player of the year, shows up at a fan-run event to raise money for cancer, wins a 50-50 and goes, you know what, I'm not taking this money, I'm buying the bar around. That's just awesome.
Yeah, that was tremendous. Jovan Johnson's a stand-up dude for doing that, and that a tremendous, tremendous jacket he had.
That sequence coat was chef kisses, man. And everyone, we were obviously. I went to the breakfast with a bunch of Ticats fans. That's who I went to the cancer event with. Everyone was saying, "Hey, man, you look pretty good in black and gold." And he said it was his favorite two colors. So I don't know. I mean, I know he's getting up there in age, but. I don't know. He's a real cool dude, and if he was to ever become a Hamilton Tiger Cat, I think a lot of people would be pretty happy.
Yeah, and that event really gave me that Grey Cup feeling, you know.
Yeah, me too.
All the different fans, and you know, there was some silent auctions, which I believe Tina, our friend Tina, won the Anthony Calvillo picture, and she asked if I wanted it framed, Tiger Cat's Anthony Calvillo picture, and I said sure. What, you know, it's free. Like, why the why the hell not? I know that it's not exactly, didn't have the greatest career in Hamilton, but it's still a nice keepsake to have. You know, raising money for cancer is great. The players were there. It was a really nice Grey Cup feeling to it. You know, nice. I had some wings there. I had something to eat. You know, it was early in the afternoon. It was just a great time.
Yeah, we got to get a couple drinks in us. They had some great mixed drinks there, man. They had this like vanilla root beer, something, I don't know what it was, but it did not taste like alcohol, and I could have drank those all night, and it would have been a very bad scene had I stayed there for too long. But that yeah, you're right, that was the Grey Cup event that felt the most Grey Cup, because it seemed like there were fans of every team there. You're doing it for a good cause, you get some players showing up. Yeah, just an
all-around. The Vanier Cup's on, you get to watch Canadian football on the TV screens.
It felt Canadian.
Yeah, for sure.
My Saturday night was different than yours. I went to the hashtag Grey Cup meetup because one of our friends was kind enough to make me her plus one. And this was the thing I was most looking forward to, because this is the party that you go to where you kind of get to sit in the corner and stare at your phone all night and not have to talk to people. And I send out one tweet. I send out a tweet as soon as I get there. Hey, man, this is a party where they encourage you to not talk to people and just talk to people on your phone, which is what I do all the time. This is great. And then I proceed to spend the rest of the night not on my phone, talking to people, because I said it was a very weird week for me, Mike. I don't know how else to put it, but Grey Cup makes for very interesting bedfellows. And it was kind of the main event of the weekend, right? Because all the people that I met during the week, a lot of them were there, and you got to hang out with them. I hung out with Zach Evans for like 10, 15 minutes, just talking about stuff. Talking about football, talking about like stories he was telling. I watched him get in a beer chugging contest with Travis from 2-0 as kind of a redemption angle. They set up, and I hope I'm not getting the cat out of the bag here, but they're setting up a rematch for Calgary. Zach and I even joke, because Travis is a Saskatchewan fan and Zach Evans plays for the Riders, and I said, "Well, Travis, don't you want Zach playing in the game?" And Zach Evans goes, "Oh, if we're in the Grey Cup, I'm still doing the food contest." So it's like. What a crazy, wonderful league this is. And it's like, I never understood in years past why people got so excited about Grey Cup. Like, I would always see people tweet about it and send out pictures. And because it's not my thing, I was just like, it never bothered me that I missed it. But now that I've gone, it's like.
You got the fever.
Yeah. Like, I want to do it again. Like, I'm looking at flights to Calgary, and I'm looking at places to stay in Calgary. And it's like. It feels like this should be this is going to be one of my weeks of vacation is going to be, I'm going where Grey Cup's going, because it's just too much fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm looking at, I don't have to fly to Calgary, but I'll have to book a hotel sometime soon, because you know they fill up really quickly. And it's just a quick bus trip, about 3 hours away from me. So I plan to be there in Calgary as well. My Saturday night, I went to the Tiger Cats party, which was, I went to the Tiger Cats party late on Thursday or Friday, I can't remember, but it wasn't that good. I wasn't impressed. But the Saturday night one was really good. They didn't have Pigskin Pete, obviously, because there's no Pigskin Pete right now, but they had some loud gentleman who would once in a while would scream out the Oski Wee Wees, and the whole crowd would get into it at the bar. No, not Mike Filer. Marwan Hage was there. Peter Diakowski were there. I got pictures with them. So that was really cool. Scott Mitchell was there. It was just a really well-run Ty Cats party, I thought.
Oh, that's good. I didn't really get a chance to hit up any of the Thai. It's a one. This is sort of the thing that I noticed. There's so many things you want to do Grey Cup week, but so little time to do it that you end up doing maybe half of what you want to do, and maybe seeing a quarter of the people you expected to see. Like it's just, I see why people keep going back because you gotta find a way to do all the stuff that you missed. You want to do the stuff that you enjoyed this year, but then you gotta make time to do all the stuff that you missed the year before. Like I see why people keep going back because I went to the one Ty Cats party they had in the afternoon where they were showing the Vanier Cup. I went to that before I went to the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event. It was like they were watching the Vanier, but not a lot of stuff was going on. Like it was kind of subdued in a way. Not bad, but just, it was in the middle of the afternoon and actually it was kind of in the morning, I guess, more than even in the afternoon. Yeah, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning when the Vanier starts in Edmonton. So, people aren't, it's not as rowdy. I imagine the night one was a lot more rowdier.
It was really good. The first night I was there, it was really dark and I couldn't really see anybody. I was sitting in the corner. It wasn't, I knew that there was Ticap players there, but they were kind of quarantined off, which was strange.
That is weird.
And they had the Oski Woo Woo shirts, which, didn't get
Ugh.
into. And I was like, yeah, that's not good. But yeah, the second night was really, really well done.
All right, so next year, you got to find your way to get to the Grey Cup meetup, and I got to find my way to get to the Ty Cats party. So,
Yes,
and then
absolutely.
Sunday, Mike, it was the game. And as odd as this sounds, maybe the thing that was least interesting about the entire week?
I would agree.
Kind
I
of
mean, the
boring
game,
game.
yeah,
Like,
the conditions were ridiculous.
yeah,
They
you
sh
want to talk about the field, so let's talk about the field, because
yeah,
that
like
made things difficult.
I don't like to rag on the CFL a lot. I'm a fanboy. I will admit this. It's my number one thing. I love it. I love the league. I don't like to harp on them too much, but this was unacceptable. It's a championship game. And for them not to have a close eye on what's happening with that field is completely unacceptable. This is your game where, 3 to 4 million people tune in each year. You have to do whatever's in your power to make that field playable, to make the game watchable, to make the product on the field a great. Great. It has to be it's your showcase event. And for them not to have kept an eye on it is really disappointing to me.
You know what's the most disappointing about it too? Edmonton didn't make the playoffs. So they had a month in which to get people out there, to make sure the field conditions were like, there's no excuse. Like, it's not like Edmonton was playing, hosting the West Final the week before the Grey Cup and they had to run. They had almost a month in which to make sure that this was in pristine condition, and they just chose not to. It's really weird that they would be so laissez-faire with conditions like this for what, like you said, the showcase event of the season.
And the weather was really good for
All
on Grey
week,
Cup Sunday.
the worst day
All
was the
week.
game. The game day was the coldest day we had there.
And that was nothing compared to last year in Ottawa when it was wet snow and it was a really good game and it could have had the possibility of not being a very good game because of the conditions. But the sun was out, everything was perfect. I think they really robbed us of a good game. I know that both teams have to play on the same surface, but I think that the offenses would have been much more productive if they weren't slipping around every, couple plays.
So the story of the game outside of the field conditions is obviously the Stampeders won the Grey Cup. I think a well-deserved Grey Cup victory, one that's 3 years in the making after all those heartbreaks in the years prior. Mitchell, Bo Levi Mitchell, gets his second Grey Cup, gets his second Grey Cup MVP, kind of solidifies his legacy a little bit. And, you know, probably, you know, he's looks like he's going to try the NFL. May have been the last we see of him in the CFL. Probably solidified a Hall of Fame spot. Honestly, I know you're not a fan, Mike, but two Grey Cups, two Grey Cup MVPs, two league MOPs, all those regular season wins. I think it's probably pretty hard to make the case that he's not a Hall of Fame quarterback now. Ottawa played really sloppy in this. Like, Trevor Harris, for as good as he looked in that East final, looked equally as terrible in this game. Threw, what, three interceptions, I think? Could have thrown, like, five or six. There were a couple.
It might have been four.
No, I think it was three. I think it was, three
okay.
picks. Maybe it was. No, I'm pretty sure it was three. But there were, what, two or three dropped interceptions by this? Like, ones that hit them right in the hands. Like, not these ones that, like, fluttered and were near picks. Like, ones that they just dropped. This was a very poor game from Trevor Harris, and one of those games where people who are detractors of Harris, well, now they're going to come out of the woodworks again. And you know what I mean? Like, I think Harris has kind of proven that, like, silences doubters in a lot of ways with the season he had. I think he had a really good season. Obviously, that East final, he was as good as any quarterback I've ever seen in a game. But in the Grey Cup, he came up really, really short.
Yeah, I really, really short. He had many opportunities. I mean, he was inside, you know, on Calgary's side of the field many times, and he would just throw it away with an interception. Or the, you know, on the one return, Deontay Spencer fumbled the ball, mm-hmm. and there was just
William Powell
way, way too many turnovers. And I thought Calgary had a chance to really put the game away several times, go up by like three touchdowns, and they just played it safe because they knew that their defense wasn't going to allow this Ottawa Redblacks team to score, or they knew that they were going to turn over the ball. So they didn't have to put their foot to the pedal and really end the game offensively because they didn't have to.
No, I think this game was over when they returned the punt for a touchdown just before halftime. I think that was – I know there's still a half left in the CFL, but I feel like once the Stamps get to 20-ish points, once they get to 20 and over, it's game over. No one's scoring, especially with those field conditions and that defense. – Ottawa wasn't scoring 20 plus on Calgary that day. I think that was the end of the game. And the weird thing is, there's 20 seconds left in the half, and you boot it down the middle of the field to the return man. Just kick it out of bounds, or kick it to the side. Like, I don't get why you kicked that ball down the middle of the field. I don't know if that was a play call or a miscommunication or just a bad kick by Richie Leone, but that's not a good call as far as I'm concerned.
No, you look back at it on retrospect, and you know, can't be giving them the ball, but it's hard to tell. I mean, maybe they had confidence in their coverage teams that they could go down there and tackle the run back, but it didn't work out that way, and that was a huge blow to Ottawa. I mean, because they just scored that touchdown, I believe. They're inching closer.
Mm-hmm.
They go into the half down by what they were down by.
Yeah,
maybe
I want to say it would have been a one-score game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then all of a sudden, I think it was 14-11 at the time, yeah, before the kick return. And then all of a sudden it's 21-11, and that's your ball game. Ottawa never even got close.
No. I thought they might have had – near the end of the game, they had a deep pass. I think it was the last interception. And I remember saying to you, oh, he's got him. And then
yes,
the Calgary defender ran over and intercepted it. And then that was the official ending. But I think the start of the beginning of the end was definitely that return.
Okay, other Grey Cup stuff to talk about outside of the game. Oh, I guess we should talk about going to Westivus. That was my first Westivus mm-hmm. that I ever got to attend. And if that's the stuff that you guys get to do every game, that's pretty fun. Just all the fans.
Yeah, yeah.
For those that don't know, all the fans kind of get together. Andrew from the Eskimo Empire podcast hosts this like fan gathering, I guess, at halftime. Why don't you explain what the hell it is?
Well, it's Superfan Mike and Andrew, and there's always a couple other guys. Travis from Two and Out is usually there because I believe he's a season ticket holder for the Eskimos or goes to many Eskimo games. And I'm always there. Basically, every halftime, I meet up with them at the information booth, and we just, you know, talk football, talk what's happened in the game. It's a really good meetup.
Yeah, and it was kind of cool because the halftime of Grey Cup is significantly longer, so we all got to hang out. We got pictures taken of, like, all the podcasters, where there was, like, it was like me, you, my twin brother Ryan from CFO Horseman, Mike, Andrew, Kayla was there. Who else? Joe,
Alex, and
Amy.
Amy, yep.
Brazilian Ty. Like, there was like 12 of us there representing the pie. I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple of people, and I apologize for that, but getting all those podcasters in one spot together, that was cool. Like, I don't know, that's what you guys get to do every game. That's a really cool thing, and that'd be a lot of fun. And we obviously can't do that in Hamilton because no one wants to hang out with me. My friends don't even want to hang out with me at games, let alone complete strangers. But I think that's a really cool thing that they do over there, and I'm glad that you get to enjoy it every week.
Yeah, it's kind of unique that there's each game there's a crew of podcasters, because there's me from our podcast, obviously, Travis from Two and Out, and then the guys from the Edmonton Empire podcast. So it is really cool.
Cool stuff. All right, let's talk about some other stuff that happened during CFL week. The CFLPA announced their All-Stars, and six Hamilton Tiger Cats made the team. Jeremiah Mazzoli was named the CFLPA All-Star quarterback. Brandon Banks was named at receiver. Simone Lawrence was named at will linebacker. Don Unamba at Sam linebacker. Delvin Bro at cornerback. And June Jones was the CFLPA's head coach. Mazzoli for quarterback, Jones at coach. I'm sure there's a certain segment of Ticat fans that have some interesting things to say about those choices, eh?
Yeah, I'd say so. But you look at, you know, the players pick these All-Star teams. So if you're going to respect anybody's opinion, it's going to be the players, the guys that actually strap up and play with these guys. So to have Mazzoli picked, it was very interesting to me. And to have Jones as the head coach was also very interesting. I mean, this is a guy that had an 8-10 record this season, but the players chose him to be the head coach. So that's pretty cool.
And the thing is, you can't vote for players on your own team. So these are players from around the league. And, like, cornerbacks vote for receivers. Defensive linemen vote for offense. Like, the guys you go up against is who votes for you. So that's a really interesting dynamic to this, too, in that it's not like all the Ticats players voted for Mazzoli for quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, this is players from around the league that have to vote for someone who's not on their team. And this kind of tells you who are the players that stood out to the guys that they battle week in, week out. I think this All-Star team, I think, means more than the league one, where it's voted on by head coaches and media. This is, like you said, this is what your peers think of you. And the fact that the peers think that Jeremiah Mazzoli is the best quarterback in the CFL in 2018, I wish that would shut up a lot of his doubters. I know it won't, because nothing short of winning the next 10 Grey Cups and 10 MOPs would do that. And even that probably wouldn't be sufficient. But I don't know. This is one of those things where whenever you get in an argument, which we all do, with people hating on Jeremiah Mazzoli, you can point to this and go, well, the other players in the league seem to think he's pretty darn good. So you say you know more than them?
Yeah, exactly. This, to me, is the real All-Star team. They know all the information. They know the defensive linemen know who the toughest offensive lineman is to get by, and vice versa. And yeah, it shows that Jeremiah Mazzoli has tremendous respect in this league.
I saw some people after this came out complain that Luke Tasker wasn't named one of the slot backs. Because so they break it up with receiver and slot backs. I think it was Banks and Duke Williams, I believe, were the receivers. The slot backs were Brian Burnham and SJ Green. Look, we all know how you and I both feel about Luke Tasker, but he lost out to Brian Burnham and SJ Green. That's tough to really, like, do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's only two spots, and Burnham and Green are two of the best in the league, and Tasker's one of the best in the league too. But I mean, to lose out to those two guys, that's not really any sort of disrespect towards Luke Tasker. At least I don't.
No, I don't think so either. Those guys are obviously tremendous players. SJ Green has been doing it in this league for many, many years. I could argue that he didn't have his best year this season, but I'm not gonna worry about it too much. I think Luke Tasker is one of the best in the league, but you can't really you know, cry too much about Brian Burnham and SJ Green getting a spot ahead of him.
So the other big news out of the CFL in the last week was the CFL awards, and the Ticats were up for three awards. Jeremiah Mazzoli was up for MOP. Larry Dean was up for defensive player, and Brandon Reverberg was up for offensive lineman, and they all lost. Bo Levi Mitchell beat out Mazzoli for MOP. Adam Bakehill beat out Larry Dean for defensive player, and Stanley Bryant from Winnipeg beat out Revenberg for most outstanding lineman. We talked about this when this was announced, that we thought it was a long shot for kind of any of them to win. So it doesn't really surprise me that they lost. I can't imagine it surprises you either, Mike.
No, I had the one guy maybe winning. I think I picked him to win was Revenberg, but
yeah,
that didn't happen. But not surprised at all. All three of those guys had tremendous seasons, but, you know, I think their counterparts had more recognizable seasons, more award-worthy, and they're more recognizable players, like with Bo and Stanley Bryan and Adam Bakehill. Not that they didn't deserve the awards, but I think that their name recognition helped them a little bit too.
I mean, it may have. I think when you look at MOP, those two guys were very similar, but Bo had more touchdown passes, and the Stampeders won more games. So I think there's your tipping point there. I think Big Hill was such a force for Winnipeg's defense.
That he was tremendous.
He was tremendous. Yeah. And I think with Hamilton, I bet you there were a lot of people who voted for Big Hill because they didn't think that Dean was even Hamilton's best. Like, there were a lot of really good defensive players for Hamilton this year. We talked about it on the show. Don Unamba, Delvin Bro could have easily been the team's nominee for defensive player. So I don't really see anything there. And you're like, we had both kind of agreed maybe Revenberg had the best shot to win, because sometimes they look at the Canadian guy and they give him that, oh, he's Canadian, we're going to throw him the award. But Stanley Bryant's a left tackle for a team that was really good on offense, and he was the defending most outstanding offensive lineman. Again, none of these to me were really all that surprising. The only thing I want to get your opinion on, Brad Sinopoli beat out Andrew Harris. I think there's 60 votes that make up the award, and he won 32-28, and Bomber fans were obviously apoplectic that Sinopoli would win. What do you think? Who would you have gone with, Brad Sinopoli or Andrew Harris?
I think I'm giving the slight edge to Sinopoli.
But you just hate Andrew Harris.
No, yeah, but I've warmed up to him over the years. I think he had an awesome year. I think he's, you know, one of the best running backs in the league, if not the best all around. But I just think Sinopoli was head and shoulders above any other Canadian receiver in the league this year. He really had a breakout season. So I would agree that Brad Sinopoli should have got the most outstanding Canadian.
It's tough for me because when I think about it, I think, well, Andrew Harris means a hell of a lot more to Winnipeg's offense than Sinopoli means to Ottawa's, but that makes him more valuable, not necessarily more outstanding. So, I mean, with the vote being as close as it was, it's not really a big surprise that you could argue for either one of them. And I do wonder if, like, I think Harris won it last year. Maybe they're like, well, you know, Sinopoli had that catch record, most catches by a Canadian in the season. I think he ended up finishing second or third in the league in receiving yards.
I
you can make a case for either one. I don't think it's as, and I think the vote shows it's not as egregious as Bomber fans are making it out. It's clearly both of those men were equally deserving. Now, speaking of awards and speaking of people that are deserving of things, we're going to end the show handing out some bozos and some slapdicks. And for all those nice people from Ottawa that I met during Grey Cup week, and believe it or not, there were a ton of Red Blacks fans that I met that were not only very nice to me, but took pictures with me, and a couple of them even asked for my autograph on those CFL podcast trading cards. We're going to piss you right the heck off right now by both of us naming or throwing out here some Red Blacks players and coaches, and I guess general managers. So, Mike, why don't you get us started with your bozo of the week, Marcel Desjardins?
Yeah, he said something when it alludes to the, you know, the off-season business of getting a new CBA in place. He said that he doesn't expect the salary cap to go up by a significant amount or even at all with these new rounds of CBA negotiations. And I think that is a big bozo move to say those things in public. It just, you know, puts fuel on the fire between the CFLPA and the CFL. You know, these guys think that the salary cap's not going up at all. Well, we'll show them. Like, obviously they want it to go up no matter what he said. But to say this publicly was just a real big bozo move. I don't like it one bit. He said a lot of bozo-ish things in the last couple of weeks, but I think that's the worst of them all.
Yeah. Oh, are you talking about the Jonathan Rose stuff? Because that was bozo.
Yeah.
That was bozo talking.
Yeah.
I just don't get why you say this stuff publicly. They asked Kyle Walters the same thing, the GM of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and he sidestepped the question. He goes, I have no idea what everything's going to look like next year. That's how you answer that question. Now, I understand, you know, we love honesty. We talked about June Jones and his over-the-top honesty, I think is the best way to put it. I'm glad that Desjardins was honest about this, but you're right. This just fans the flames and stokes the fires, and he doesn't know. And they, like, was it Brian Ramsey, I think, is the executive in charge of the PA, and he said, I have no idea how the Ottawa general manager would know these things, because as far as I know, he's not on the negotiation committee. So what is he talking about? And I think it's kind of ridiculous to think that the cap won't go up simply because that's what the players are going to be fighting for. Like, that's going to be the big thing. That, and I would imagine insurance post-playing career because of what's happened with, oh my God, who's the player? Jonathan Hefny, who basically got paralyzed, essentially, playing in a game a couple of years ago, and now has to go to crowdfunding to pay his medical bills because his insurance ran out, I believe it's a year after they last take the field, which to me is, I don't understand how you can get hurt playing the game and it's not covered in perpetuity until you're made whole. You know what I mean? Like, it makes absolutely no sense to me how a guy, like, if you get injured at work, you get paid a percentage of your income for as long as you're out. I just don't get how this can happen. So those feel to me like the two of the bigger issues facing this upcoming negotiation. So for Desjardins to say, like, oh, the cap's not going up, and even if it does, it's insignificant, just idiotic to say that in public.
Yeah, he's not on the board of governors. He doesn't have
no idea.
He has no clue, and I just don't know why he said those things. It's just it's a very stupid thing to say, Josh. I don't agree with it one bit, and I don't want any more animosity than what there already is. I want to see CFL football start at its regular time next year. And for a bozo like this to say something publicly like that is just dumb.
All right, Mike, it's time to hand out the final slapdick of the week for this year, 2018. And just to let you know, when I came home from Edmonton, what was awaiting me as I got here? My custom-made slapdick T-shirt in the Ottawa Red Blacks font that I cannot wait to wear at the Grey Cup in Calgary and show off to all those beautiful people that come from our nation's capital. And this one was pretty easy for me, Mike. As soon as I saw what happened, the news popped up, I believe it was Saturday morning, Greg Ellingson got caught essentially driving. We don't know if it's drunk, but we can presume it is. He was stopped by police and refused to give a breath sample. This is the second time in, 2 months that we've seen this, maybe even in a month that we've seen this with the CFL. Charleston Hughes was famously a while back was popped for the same thing, refusing to give a breath sample after the cops didn't pull him over. He was pulled over and apparently passed out in the back of his car. I guess he was also very drunk. We called Charleston Hughes out for it. The Riders, after much dithering, suspended Hughes for a game. The Red Blacks announced that Ellingson is suspended from team activities. But I put this out there on Twitter, and I'm kind of curious as to what you think. He's a pending free agent. The season is over. This is a PR move, is it not? Like, there's no actual consequences currently for Greg Ellingson for doing this, because it's not like he's missing a game. It's not like he's missing a paycheck. This is nothing. It's kind of a meaningless gesture.
Yeah, I don't really know what they could do. You know, he's not really part of the team. Well, he's not part of the team. He's part of the team until free agency, but, like, I don't see what they can really do to punish him. You know, who knows? Maybe he's not even in this league next year. Maybe he's in some other league. There's many leagues coming up, apparently. But maybe it'd be a good idea if he is in the CFL for the CFL to step in and be like, hey, whoever signs this guy, there needs to be some kind of repercussion.
I think, well, apparently, if I recall correctly, the league said that they would have stepped in with Hughes had the Riders not suspended him. So I hope the league does right here and announces once Greg Ellingson has signed a contract for the 2019 season, they announce that he will miss the first game of the 2019 season. Hughes missed a game. I think Ellingson should miss a game. Maybe even the league could put that out there before he even signs, saying if anyone signs Greg Ellingson, he will miss game one of the season.
Yeah,
I think that would be a good idea. I just have no time or place for guys who drive impaired. It's selfish. It's reckless. It's dangerous. You could hurt yourself. Worse, you could hurt or kill somebody else. If he's in Ottawa, he can send out a tweet, guys. I need a ride home. A fan would pick him up. You and I took taxis everywhere we went in Edmonton. We work regular jobs. Greg Ellingson makes six figures a year. He can't afford an Uber or a taxi home. It's inexcusable. Yeah. This behavior. It's not the 1960s anymore. It's not cool. It's not the in thing to drive drunk and, oh, I made it home and I was wasted. You just look like a dickhead, to be perfectly honest. And
he's not 20 anymore. He's not 20 years old.
He's probably over 30.
Yeah. So.
Smarten up. Like, ridiculous. You shouldn't do this. I saw a lot of Red Blacks fans calling him out for it, and I was very happy to see that. And the thing is it's the usual cadre of Red Blacks fans that I see all the time who aren't those rah-rah homers who, no matter what it is, they're the ones basically who don't attack me for ripping into Ottawa.
Right.
So I saw that, and I was like, that's really nice. And then you see the anonymous Red Blacks fans who are not only – well, we don't really know, and some of them were just outright defending it, saying it's not a big deal. And I know I harp on Red Blacks fans a lot. The ones that know they don't deserve it, are they know who they are. This is not aimed at them. But for the people that are defending this, what is wrong with like this? I don't get it. Is to see people that think that athletic prowess trumps societal concerns, it's very disturbing that in the year 2018 we're still seeing this. It's not boys will be boys. It's not athletes can do whatever they want. There are consequences. There could have been dangerous consequences to this, and for people to go to kind of wave it off like it's no big deal, that's I find that very disturbing personally, Mike, because if you're saying this now, what else would you be okay with from your sporting idols? What would you allow them to do if potentially – and look, Ellingson was lucky. Nothing bad came of this for someone else, but it could have. And the next person that does this in the CFL or in any walk of life, something bad could happen. You can't defend this. You shouldn't defend this. I don't care what team a guy plays for. Doing this, just plain wrong. And the fans defending him are wrong.
Yeah, and I'm as big a Ticat fan as anyone, but there's some fans of every team that seem to be delusional. Like this is their lives, you know, everything depends on this. It doesn't matter what someone does when they're not on the field. Everything just depends on winning and your team being successful, and it's just, you know, there's Ticat fans like that, obviously. It's not just Red Black fans, but to me, it's just – it's a very strange thing, you know? Very strange thing.
Yeah, I don't get it. And you're right. There are fans of every team. There were fans of the Rough Riders who were absolving Charleston Hughes of this back when he did it a month and a half ago. If this was to happen for a player on any other team, there would be fans that would defend it too, and I would be just as sickened by them as I am by these Red Blacks fans for doing it. But I'm mostly sickened by Greg Ellingson, quite frankly. I used to like Greg Ellingson. I still think he's a great player. I've lost a lot of respect for him as a human being because he made a very selfish decision that could have ended very badly for himself or someone else. And I'm sorry, I just don't have time for that. A lot of people, I unfortunately for myself, I have never dealt with it. But there's a lot of people out there that have dealt with loss because of drunk driving, because of impaired driving. In 2018, with the amount of ways that you can get yourself home without putting yourself or someone else at risk by driving impaired, it's inexcusable behavior by Greg Ellingson here.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's it for Podski WeeWee, not just for this week, but probably for 2018. Mike, it was another fabulous year of talking Ticats football with you. I know we've done this before where we've talked about, well, we're not going to do another episode this year, and then something big happened. But I can't imagine anything as big as the Ticats naming a new head coach will happen between now and the new year. If it does, we will come back with an episode. But I think anything short of, you know, the team trading Jeremiah Mazzoli for, like, Mike Riley's negotiation rights, I can't really see us coming back to this until after the new year. So, Mike, it was another great year. It was a lot more fun to do the show this year than last year, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. The 0-8 start really put a damper on coming to the show every week.
Yeah, made it tough.
Yeah, but, you know, we both had high expectations this year. I swore that the Ticats were going to be in the Grey Cup and we would watch them live. But, you know, that's sports. It didn't happen, but still had a great time doing the pod this year, for sure.
Yeah, the run to the Grey Cup, I would much rather do the show every year and have this team lose in the East Final than to do what we did last year, where mid-October the season is over and we're basically trying to find ways to make chicken salad out of chicken poop by talking about glorified exhibition games. Obviously, I want this team to win a Grey Cup. We all want that. Most everyone who listens to the show, because I got to think that the majority of our listeners are Ticats fans, they want the Ticats to win a Grey Cup. But if you told me...
It'll be the 20-year anniversary next year, so maybe we'll get lucky.
Maybe we will. And hey, our drought's still not as long as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, right?
Sure.
So
sure.
Until the Bombers win one, at least we're only the second...
Yes.
Drought in the CFL, and I can handle that. We're the punchline to a lot of jokes, but we're not that punchline quite yet. But no, this was a wonderful year, and thanks everyone for listening. Mike, as always, thanks you for being my tag team partner on this journey. And barring major news, this is the last Podski WeeWee of 2018. Geez, I'm already skipping ahead a year. Wishing it was 2020, because then the Grey Cup would be in Hamilton.
At least maybe.
Well, hopefully we'll find out. Maybe that would be the thing. We find that out before Christmas, and that brings us back.
To talk
on the pod. But
well, that'd be good. That'd be a good thing.
That would be a good thing. That would be a very. That'd be a nice Christmas present for all of
us.
Hey, maybe we'll get the CFL schedule in December, like we did last year too. Who knows?
Yeah,
hey,
we will.
You know what? Now I'm talking myself out of this being the last show, but it is officially it's unofficially the last show unless something big happens. So. I'm rambling, let's close this out. So that was Podski WeeWee for this week and for this year. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.